In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen. So I'll tell you that I got so neck deep into these readings and into this sermon this week that I typed into my computer the phrase algebraic simplicity. That immediately made me laugh, but it really would have made Mrs. Adams, my seventh grade algebra teacher, laugh that Jimmy Bartz used algebraic and simplicity in the same sentence. He's not the strongest math student. I was well on my way before I reviewed what I had written, laughed out loud, and deleted the whole thing. Because only a priest, only a pastor, only a religious professional, a wannabe theologian can make God is love complicated. I second-guessed my vocation and wondered what the religious landscape of America might look like if people like me didn't step up to the pulpit and wax every week, if these stories didn't become cerebral but remained heartfelt. You know, would we get it more easily? Would we get it better? Would we have some deeper sense of what these stories, this tradition, our history, even this campus is about? Would we know that if we were able to excavate to the center of this whole thing, to the very center, digging past Episcopalian and Anglican and Christian and Jesus follower and past Israelite, all the way to the very center, would we know that we would simply find love? In all its complicated and uncomplicated forms, there would be love. I spent a couple of days this week on the campus of Yale Divinity School, and things get even more complicated in places like that. We might think that a diocesan center or a cathedral is the keeper of our tradition's flames, but I believe it's our theological schools, and I'm a fan of theological education. But in residential Christian communities, the traditions can become these venerated idols rather than guardrails or signposts. It's that classic problem that we humans have. Turning ideas, preferences, signs and symbols, arrows pointing the way into idols and law and code. As church-going faithful, we have to remind ourselves that God is just as comfortable, if not more so, out there than in here. I count myself lucky to have had the opportunity from time to time to spend time with Episcopalians at Yale, and they have some curious practices in their chapel on weekday mornings. They read the daily office or morning prayer, and when they recite the Psalms, they do so in what their directions call hushed tones. They whisper the Psalms aloud as a worshiping community. And to a religious nerd like me, like, it's kind of cool. It works. It sounds breathy and poetic and slightly mysterious to hear the lyrics of the Psalms uttered in that way. No doubt that tradition comes from the spots in the narrative where God speaks to God's people in the quote-unquote still small voice. You remember that that phrase, that description of God's voice. And while I'm there, really truly appreciating the cultivation of piety in a community of people that gather at least 5 times a week to pray together, I also find myself wondering, you know, do they know? Surely they know. Reassure me that these fine people at this fine institution who are in formation for leadership in the church, assure me that they know this. All that we do here, all of this, at its epicenter is love. Hushed tones are beautiful. This log church is beautiful. It's full of rich history. Its walls and ceilings and floors have been painted by tens of thousands of prayers, some which are written in prayer books in the pew racks, others, probably the more important ones, written on the hearts of the faithful and the seeking who came to this place for whatever reason. Our valley is beautiful. One could easily defend the argument that we live in the most beautiful place in North America. Maybe the most beautiful place in the Northern Hemisphere. Maybe the most beautiful place in the world. But none are as beautiful as a couple at odds reconciling and coming together in love. None are as compelling as some help extended to a struggling family through the payment of a light and heat bill. None are as warm as a good coat on a cold day given to someone who is without. None are as powerful as the care given by one to another in a time of struggle or suffering or confusion or illness or fear or pain. None are as lovely or as important as nurturing a child who is fussy and hungry for food and attachment and connection. None. Nothing measures up to love who we know to be God. That's what John says this morning. God is love. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying we don't struggle. That this God-love life doesn't at time or in seasons of our lives seem elusive. We can hear the voice of the psalmist again. How long, O Lord, how long? That can give us a sense that this is humanity's problem, one for the ages. Or we can connect to our own very real experiences of isolation and fear and disconnection. What do I do now? How did I manage to get myself into this particular situation? Or the one that's most familiar to me, how did I manage to get myself into this particular situation again? Struggle is just a part of who we are. And if you are like me, then sometimes you struggle just for the sake of struggling because you know it's familiar. Struggle may not be my brother, but it sure as heck is my first cousin. We have these two readings this morning, different genres, but from the same author. John the Evangelist gives us this account of Jesus, and John the Evangelist gives us this wisdom from his own experience, writing to his own community of contemporaries. There's very little urgency in what he writes, but there's some wonderful poetic gravity. We hear the language of connection in John's words. John's Jesus advises, abide in me as I abide in you. I am the vine, you are the branches. Connection. Listen again to how John explains our connection, ours to God and to one another, to his own community in his letter. Beloved. It's our title. That's how John addresses us. Beloved. Beloved. Since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. We don't see God. We don't. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us. By this we know we abide in him and he in us. How is it then that we see God? Oh, we don't. How is it then that we experience God? By loving one another. Want to experience God? Then put Bactine on the skinned knee of a child. Want to experience God? Then spend some time volunteering downstairs in the Jackson food cupboard. Want to experience God? Then help pull somebody or dig somebody out of a snowbank. Want to experience God? Then give someone a ride who needs it. Want to experience God? Then grab a cup of coffee after the service and listen to a sister or a brother. We make this hard because we tend to do that to ourselves. But what if we were disciplined? What if we disciplined ourselves toward love rather than toward surviving? What if we disciplined ourselves toward care and compassion and nurturing and listening and serving and healing and attending? What if we did it together? If not as a family, then as a team. You know, someone might ask you, someone who believes religious practice and religious affiliation is peculiar, someone might ask you, what do you do over there at St. John's at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning? What is it that y'all weird religious people do? And we could just respond, oh, we use ritual and prayer and readings from the Bible and funny costumes and music and sermons and beautiful architecture to help us strategize about how we might love one another better and more consistently. That's all we do. We do it because at the epicenter of any religious practice, at its very center, you find love. Nothing more, and certainly not anything less. Sounds good to me. Amen.